Thursday, everybody, and welcome to episode 85 of the Snyder Cut. I am your excited host, Jeff Snyder, senior film reporter at Collider. Excited because we're looking at a holiday weekend, guys. Three-day weekend, Memorial Day. Lord knows I need it. Geez, where do we start today? I guess we should go back to where we left off last week with the MGM Amazon deal, which finally closed. I mean, you know, the deal may take many months to close, but in principle, it was agreed to terms around $8.5 billion, which I do think makes more sense. I know that MGM was pushing for like a $10 billion sale. They were never going to get $10 billion. The first rumor that came out was like around $9 billion. It turns out it settled at about $8.5 billion, which is about what I'd expect, especially when you consider, I believe, that Disney acquired Marvel and Lucasfilm for less. It was like less than $8.5 billion. It was maybe around $8 billion, a little bit over. And when you think about like the value that obviously Marvel and Star Wars brings, I mean, it's just unlimited movies and TV shows for the next decade, at least. MGM obviously has a lot of great properties, and that's why Amazon pushed to do this deal. It wasn't just the, I don't know what it is, 4,000 movie titles and 17,000, you know, TV episodes or whatever. It is that library, obviously, but it's also the James Bond stuff and the ability to you know, spin off, you know, after like Daniel Craig's James Bond run is over, we may get the Bond universe on Amazon, you know, or Money Pun, or, you know, Miss Money Pun gets her own show and it follows her adventures, or, you know, Q School or whatever the hell it is. But you can rest assured that Amazon acquired MGM in part to, you know, take advantage of and exploit the Bond library and that property and everything. And I know, you know, Bond is owned by Eon, and they came out and said, like, we are definitely sticking to a theatrical plan. Like, these are not movies that are going to be made for Amazon Prime Video. They may wind up on Amazon Prime Video, you know, after that first or second window or whatever. But Amazon has always been a company that put its movies out into theaters first. You know, it wasn't Netflix was always pushing like for a day and date thing. I think this is a smart move for both sides. I think it's a good fit on paper. You know, there have been a lot of questions about the executive ranks of it all, you know, because MGM has Mike DeLuca and Mark Burnett, who are two very, very big personalities. You know, if I were them, like I would put DeLuca in charge. I just have enormous respect for Mike DeLuca. I think he's a brilliant executive with fantastic taste. You know, the idea is that DeLuca had a certain level of autonomy at MGM that he may not have at Amazon, you know, with all these sort of tech execs looking over his shoulder. They may want him to rein in the spending. I mean, MGM has really been on a roll with its spending lately. You know, just think of like the projects that it has put into production and in development, you know, Lord and Miller thing, Project Hail Mary with Ryan Gosling, the Gucci movie, Ridley Scott, like, you know, all these stars. So like MGM has been spending pretty freely, I would say, in the last year or two, winning a lot of big auctions and stuff. And so now Amazon has this, you know, a really robust development pipeline in addition to all the library stuff and all that. If I were them, and I think it was Variety that wrote something to this effect, but like, you know, I love Julia Rappaport and you know, Matt Newman, the people who are over at Amazon, but I think if they kind of excel at making smaller indie movies, the kind of movies that, you know, go to festivals or that win awards, whereas DeLuca, not that DeLuca can't, you know, produce an awards contender, because certainly can, but he has more commercial mainstream tastes, I'd like to think. And so he may be the guy sort of running the show, you know, bringing in the theatrical packages and things like that. Whereas, Julie and Matt may end up buying movies for the streamer, you know, just for Amazon Prime Video without a theatrical component. I don't really get the vibe that DeLuca would report to Jen Salke, considering, you know, how much more experience he is on the movie side. I don't know if something's going to give there. But DeLuca is very much a get. And yeah, I could see him going head to head with Scott Stuber at Netflix, competing for, you know, all the top properties that, you know, are too adult for Disney. Is there anything else? I mean, there's been a ton of analysis out there. But you know, clearly we are living, as I said last week, in these M&A times. It's just been merger mania, and I expect that we will see more of it. You know, whether it's Sony, whether it's Lionsgate, who knows? The idea is that NBC Universal may have to do something to scale up to compete with these kind of new giants. But we can move on to the fun stuff. That was like the lame, dry business analysis, right? Let's just talk Spider-Man. And you know what? I'm going to throw it all out there this episode. Let's just do it up. So Aaron Taylor Johnson has been cast as Kraven the Hunter, which is a J.C. Chandor movie. I believe it's coming January 2023, if I remember the story right. Justin Kroll from Deadline said that, you know, Aaron Taylor Johnson got the part over Brad Pitt and Keanu Reeves and Adam Driver and John David Washington. It's possible, or maybe all those guys just said no and turned the project down, which wouldn't surprise me. Justin also added that Aaron Taylor Johnson really impressed Sony execs in Bullet Train, which is the movie he's in with Brad Pitt and, you know, half of Hollywood. I mean, I like the casting. I do think that Keanu and Adam Driver would have been really kind of interesting for this. But I've always liked Aaron Taylor Johnson. I thought he was great in Nocturnal Animals. Like, I can't believe that Michael Shannon got the Oscar nomination over him, even though Aaron won the Golden Globe, I believe. He's just like kind of a chameleon, I think. And I mean, I do wish that Marvel had cast someone who hadn't already played a role in the MCU. Although, you know, Quicksilver was obviously a very short role. Like, you know, maybe they just wanted to do right by him by saying, hey, don't worry, you didn't lose your MCU eligibility. We're going to get you a big role. We know we kind of, you know, blew it. At least that's how I felt. I really like the character of Quicksilver, whether he's played by Aaron Taylor Johnson or Evan Peters. But, you know, obviously Aaron's run was very, very quick. So, you know, a lot of speculation. Is Kraven the Hunter part of the Sinister Six? Is that what they're building towards? Is he going to be in Spider-Man 3? I really don't know at this point anymore. But here's, you know, sort of what I had heard last month. So last month, you know, it's obviously that they are building to the Sinister Six in Spider-Man 3, which is, right, Spider-Man No Way Home. So I had heard that the No Way Home wasn't in reference to Spider-Man, but to the villains, that the villains are coming out of all these, you know, the different alternate dimensions and things like that, and that they don't have a way to get home. And so the villains that I'd heard, and you know, Sony has obviously copped to the fact that Doc Ock is in the movie, Alfred Molina, and Jamie Foxx is Electro. Those are the only two that we really know. I'm pretty sure that Willem Dafoe's Green Goblin will be the main villain in this film. So that's three. And then the other three that I heard weren't like, you know, Michael Mando or anything like that. I'd heard Sandman, Rhino, and Lizard. Those were the other three that I'd heard. I don't know if any of those are confirmed. I don't know if Risa Fons or Giamatti or Thomas Hayden Church have been seen on set or anything. I haven't really been paying attention to the paparazzi photos or things like that. But that was my understanding, is that all six of those past Spider-Man villains, because it doesn't really make sense to introduce new villains necessarily in this movie, you know, but six Spider-Man villains from the past, you know, wind up in Peter Parker's universe or whatever, and they are the ones who have no way of getting home. So yeah, we will see. I hope I didn't let the cat out of the bag. Spoiler alert, if I did, but so I'd take it all with a grain of salt. But that was the word on the street at one point. We can move on from Spider-Man stuff. Timothy Chalamet. This is another one I kind of called. Timothy Chalamet has been cast as Wonka in the origin story that Paul King, the director of Paddington, is doing for Warner Brothers. I'd broken this a few months ago, saying it was really between Timothée Chalamet and Tom Holland. And you know, listen, there's a lot of projects that are going to be between those two guys. Because, you know, why would you finance this movie if you couldn't get one of them? I understand it's not necessarily the actor these days. It's the role. People would go see a Wonka movie, whether it's Timothée Chalamet or Timothy Greenberg, you know, like, but I don't know. Maybe he just, maybe it's the young Johnny Depp of it all. It just seemed like, how do you not cast one of these two guys, and Chalamet in particular, given that he has the relationship with Dune and is quite frankly the better actor as well. Not to put down Tom Holland. Tom Holland is absolutely perfect as Peter Parker. That's something Timothée Chalamet, I don't know that he could do as well. But yeah, Tom Holland definitely riding a bit of a cold streak, you know, between Chaos Walking and Devil All the Time and Cherry. Like, oof, I don't know. I'm not surprised that Timmy got this one. You know, I've heard rumblings about the potential villain. We'll see if that pans out. I don't know if the Oompa Loompas are going to factor into this, if this movie is going to feature Wonka discovering the Oompa Loompa tribe, if the Oompa Loompas are going to be played by an actor, or if they'll be like CG creations, which I think could be kind of more interesting. Is this a project that we need? Not necessarily. I don't need to demystify, you know, all these iconic characters who have a little bit of mystery to them. I think that's what we like about them. So I don't necessarily need to explore the Wonka origin story, but at the same time, I don't think it's like, it's not the worst idea I've ever heard. You know, when was the last Wonka movie? Like 15 years ago or so? And I know it was Tim Burton and Johnny Depp. A lot of people want to wash the taste of Johnny Depp out of their mouths. Yeah, listen, my family's in the candy business, so I've always had an affinity for Wonka and this world, and I think Timothy is a great attachment. He's a great start. Here's a project I care a lot less about, and that would be Highlander. They are redoing Highlander. I think it's Chad Stahelski directing, but Henry Cavill got cast. It's not quite clear if he's going to be the Highlander or I think the original report said he's going to be playing one of the lead roles. He may very well end up being the villain in this, but I don't think I've ever seen Highlander. I really have I have no curiosity about it. It is like, you know, like a Red Sonja or just one of the, like a Conan the Barbarian. I just don't care. You know, it seems like it's so of the 80s and you know, swords, and I just don't care. Don't care when it was Ryan Reynolds, don't care when it's Henry Cavill, don't care, period. Sorry. This was a big piece of casting this week. Gabriel LaBelle, a newcomer for the most part, cast as the lead in Steven Spielberg's movie, you know, his coming-of-age film about his own childhood, growing up in Arizona. A big get for this young actor, for sure. He is playing the young John Bernthal character in American Gigolo. And, you know, I don't know if there was any issue with dates that they had to work out or whatever, but this was a part that a lot of people went out to read. And I think it's, you know, Spielberg has just like a great, he's got a real like knack, like a good antenna for casting kids, right? Whether it's E.T. or Jurassic Park or War of the Worlds with Dakota Fanning. And even Jeremy Irvine, who we talked about on last week's show, right? We kind of felt like, I mean, I thought he was good in War Horse, but then he kind of disappeared, right? And now he just booked this big thing. So I feel like Gabe LaBelle is headed for a long, fruitful career after this. I mean, this one in particular has to mean a lot to Steven because the kid's playing him, right? It's a character inspired by young Steven Spielberg, who encountered anti-Semitism growing up as a kid. And I imagine that he will continue to explore that theme, particularly just given the way of the world these days and how things have gone. I still don't know if this is going to be a period movie or if it's going to be set in present day. I would imagine it will be period. The rumored title is The Fabelmans. I saw that online. It was like part of a casting call, The Fabelmans. It's not what I feels like an A24 movie that, from Noah Baumbach or something, more than it does like a, you know, Steven Spielberg's new movie, but whatever. I dig it. I mean, it's not like he was going to call it the Spielbergs, right? But again, it's Paul Dano and Michelle Williams are this kid's parents. Seth Rogen is his favorite uncle. I'm excited for Gabe LaBelle, and yeah, congrats to him and his whole team, because this is obviously a big one. Nice scoop by Justin Kroll over at Deadline. Deadline also reported that Jonah Hill is going to play Sidney Korshak, who was Lou Wasserman's fixer at MCA back in the day. William Monahan, I believe, is writing this one. Jonah Hill as a fixer. I could see it. I mean, it sounds interesting. I didn't love, like, I keep thinking of Hail Caesar, which Jonah Hill was in, right? That was about a fixer. I'm kind of surprised he would go back to this territory, but at least now he gets to play the main guy rather than just, you know, a guy with a green cashier's visor on or whatever. I like the idea of Jonah working with William Monahan, who is a really good writer who has kind of faded into the background the last few years, I want to say. And it doesn't seem like he's been as busy or that the headlines have sort of touted him as much as they used to. So yeah, maybe they can come up with something cool. It sounds like an interesting project. Jesse Plemons cast in Love and Death. Yeah, we had some interesting TV news this week. So Love and Death is the Candy Montgomery thing. And this one is over on HBO Max, right? This is with Elizabeth Olsen. Hulu is doing its own with Elizabeth Moss. And that one was announced first, but we haven't heard anything since. There's been no other casting. I mean, I've seen Nick Antosca in a few different TV announcements. So I know he's super busy, as is Elizabeth Moss, quite frankly. So it feels like this HBO Max project coming up from behind, but now moving at a faster pace. They've got Elizabeth Olsen, and now Jesse Plemons is going to be playing the guy who Candy Montgomery had an affair with. Those are two really good anchors. I mean, Olsen and Plemons are two very, very talented performers. I still prefer the creative team behind Candy at Hulu, but, you know, Nicole Kidman, David E. Kelly, like these are no slouches that are behind Love and Death. And I do really like, you know, Texas Monthly and their track record, you know, with some of the stories that they've done. This movie, this project is based on the Texas Monthly articles. So I'm pumped for this. I'm pumped for like The Staircase. That's another true crime series that there was some news on this week. Excuse me. As Parker Posey joined the cast, this is another HBO Max project. So like clearly like that genre is working for HBO Max. You know, they also did Bear Town and The Investigation and The Head. Not that those are, well, The Investigation is true crime, but the other two are just series. But yeah, I can see true crime becoming like HBO Max's bread and butter, if you will. But anyways, The Staircase, that's based on the big docu-series. The scripted series is coming from Antonio Campos, went to NYU with me, and it's going to star, forgive me, Colin Firth, Toni Collette, Rosemary DeWitt, Juliette Binoche, and now Parker Posey. Those are five like formidable actors. So I'm really looking forward to that, especially because I never saw the Staircase docuseries. That was something that was like the original, like the big one that sort of kickstarted this whole genre, and I never actually saw it. So I'm looking forward to that Antonio Campos show. What else? Joseph Gordon-Levitt cast as Uber CEO Travis Kalanick in a Showtime anthology series titled Super Pumped. I imagine that you would have to change the title, right? Each season, because Super Pumped was a book about Uber culture and that kind of thing. It's not like the next season of the show, which would be about a new company, that wouldn't make sense to call it Super Pumped. So I might have appreciated a little bit more of a generic, all-encompassing name for this anthology, if that is in fact what it is. A lot of these projects, I feel like, are limited series, but then they want to sequelize it, and you really can't sequelize a limited series. That defeats the whole point of calling it a limited series, and so they call it an anthology series. you know, like American Crime Story is, right? I mean, the Uber story sounds really interesting. I'm not familiar with all the ins and outs of it. I don't think that Travis Kalanick has the profile of like a Mark Zuckerberg or even a Jack Dorsey, but I love Joseph Gordon-Levitt. He's also a really, really good performer. Could totally see him, you know, playing a Silicon Valley sort of startup tech douchebag who changed the world for sure, no doubt, but also rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. Amidst his rise. More TV news. Trevante Rhodes just now cast as Mike Tyson in Iron Mike. Now, a lot of people seem to like Mike Tyson, and I get that. Like he seems like he gives a good soundbite. He's obviously become a little bit more personable, and, you know, since he left the ring, you know, popping up in movies like The Hangover or Entourage. Like he seems like a fun guy to hang out with, but also there's some depth to him, some like unexpected depth. I like the Tyson documentary, but at the same time, we have to acknowledge this guy's past. Like he was in jail for rape. He bit a man's ear off in the ring, disgracing his sport. He is clearly a polarizing figure, but I think that's sort of the beauty of this series is that, you know, we don't just want to see a show about someone who's entirely good or entirely bad. I want to see take the good with the bad. Trevante Rhodes strikes me as a really strong choice for this. I don't think that he's done a lot of good work since Moonlight, to be honest. I mean, The Predator was horrible. I did not care for Bird Box. I didn't see 12 Strong. I didn't see The U.S. versus Billie Holiday, which may very well be his best thing since Moonlight. But like, you know, clearly this was a guy with a lot of potential and it hasn't quite been met. I think that if he does a good job as Iron Mike, you could absolutely see him on the list for that Black Superman. Like the guy he's talented and he has the right build to play Mike Tyson, to play Superman, whoever it is. I'm not saying that he's going to be the Black Superman. I'm just saying if he does a good job as Mike Tyson, it's got to be on the table, right? And this whole show hails from the team behind I, Tonya, which I really liked. I thought it was great. Margot Robbie, Craig Gillespie, Stephen Rogers, he's the creator of the show. Karen Gist is the showrunner. Very curious what happened with Brett Hedblum, though. He was part of the original announcement, and then in today's announcement, they asked us to take him out. I don't know if he left Lucky Chap or lost a credit or if something else happened there, but kind of curious. Rina Sawayama, who's a singer, an international singer, has landed the female lead, it seems, in John Wick Chapter 4, opposite Keanu Reeves. Never heard of her, never heard of her music, but, you know, whatever. Just nice to know John Wick 4 is picking up steam and starting to cast up. A24 and Amazon Amazon picked up A24's Val Kilmer documentary titled Val. I bet you this could be really interesting. Val Kilmer strikes me as a super interesting guy. He's had a very, very interesting career, you know, from the mid 80s all the way up to the stuff he's been doing, lately. And he's had his health struggles and battles with cancer. And I don't know, this seems like a very, very interesting documentary. I'm glad that he's like alive for it too. You know, we've seen a lot of these sort of artist documentaries, but they've been posthumous. And I like that we're going to get to celebrate Val Kilmer a little bit while he's still around, you know. IFC picked up Benedetta from Paul Verhoeven. Searchlight announced that The French Dispatch will open October 22nd after playing at Cannes. I mean, Variety had the big exclusive on that, exclusive that French Dispatch was going to play in Cannes. I feel like we've known this for the last year. Anyways, it's opening October 22nd against Last Night in Soho, which we will be talking more about later in this podcast, and Clint Eastwood's Cry Macho. Again, like I said, when we were talking about the Dune of it all and whether that would open on HBO Max day and date or not, I got a tip this week from a good source. This isn't a guarantee or anything like that, but the source had heard that the Warner Brothers experiment with Day and Date on HBO Max may end in September, which may very well be why the Dune thing on October 1st you know, why that report could very well be true. I just have a really tough time buying that Clint Eastwood's Cry Macho is going to debut day and date on HBO Max. That more than Dune, which is cost probably 3 or 4 times as much as Cry Macho, even more than Matrix 4. You don't piss off Clint Eastwood if you're Warner Brothers. And I'm trying to imagine them sitting Clint Eastwood down and saying, Clint, we've got this thing called the streaming service. It's called HBO Max. The movie's going to be there the same day it's in theaters. I'm sure he just gives them a look. It's like, so I would not be surprised to see that deal come to an end in September, which would allow Dune to do as I said that, and Deadline said that it would. This one just broke before the podcast. Universal nabbed a live action project from Lord and Miller called Strays. It's an adult comedy from a writer on American Vandal about an abandoned dog who teams up with other stray dogs to get revenge on his former owner. I love that. I don't know if this would be, I guess it is live action, so it's not animated. I assume the dogs will be talking still. And it's going to be directed by Josh Greenbaum, who just did Barb and Star Go to Vista Del Mar. Didn't love that movie, but that was more about the concept than the execution. That just like was something that probably made Kristen Wiig and Annie Mumolo laugh and, you know, kind of wore out its welcome. Felt more like an SNL sketch, but that's not Josh Greenbaum's fault. Like, he made it colorful and had, you know, some fun musical numbers and, you know, some kind of weird twisted flights of fancy that I thought he did a good job with. So I like the idea of him teaming up with Lord and Miller on a movie about dogs out for revenge. Sign me up. Speaking of dogs, Dwayne Johnson tapped to voice Crypto the Super Dog in DC League of Super Pets. This is an animated movie over at Warner Brothers. Not sure if this is for theatrical or HBO Max or what the deal is, but The Rock is going to be Superman's dog. That makes a lot of sense. And Dwayne Johnson really doesn't really do that many voice roles. I mean, outside of like Moana, I just feel like he could, I guess, did he do Clifford the Big Red Dog too? I forget. But, I don't know. I feel like he'd be offered a zillion voice roles, like, you know, Seth Rogen was back in the day, and it doesn't seem like he does that many of them. So I you know, this seems like a fun one, a DC Pets movie. Yeah, kids lead it up. Lindsay Lohan from The Rock is Superman's dog to Lindsay Lohan. You never know where the show's going to go, folks. It could veer, you know, it could zig when you're expecting it to zag. So Lindsay Lohan signing on to star in a holiday rom-com over at Netflix. Netflix is definitely trying to break into like the holiday Christmas movie racket, you know, that Hallmark Channel has just been dominating for God knows how long. Netflix obviously has way more eyeballs, you know, so they should be able to attract a higher level of talent. They're like, yeah, you know, if we can make this movie with Lindsay Lohan instead of Kelly Martin or whoever, I don't even know who they put in those movies anymore. Then yeah, why not do it? And I'm all for a Lohan comeback. You know, she was a fun little child actor. I know she kind of went crazy and went off the rails. A lot of that had to do with the media and the way that it was, you know, writing about her and depicting her. So yeah, I hope it goes well and it's a comeback for her, because I do think that she could do interesting work with, you know, like an auteur director who might know how to use her. I don't know that Paul Schrader's The Canyons was necessarily the right vehicle for her, even if that did get, you know, decent, you know, earn her decent reviews. This movie sounds like Overboard, by the way. It's like, you know, a rich spoiled hotel heiress gets amnesia and ends up spending Christmas with a blue collar guy and his kid. Yeah, whatever. Mark Ruffalo, we had this scoop on Friday of last week. Mark Ruffalo joining Poor Things, Yorgos Lanthimos' new movie, which is like a riff on Frankenstein. It's going to star Emma Stone. It also has Willem Dafoe, Rami Youssef, and Gerard Carmichael join the cast this week. What do you want me to tell you about this story? Like, this is something that I've been on for months. I was probably the first person to call on it. And, you know, some of these stories, like, you give up a scoop to get a tip like this. Or, you know, sometimes, you know, us reporters make trades. And so the Ruffalo was something that I traded for. And so, you know, to have it hold for months and then say, oh, you know, you're going at the same time as all these other outlets and it's an even break. It's like, no. That's not what I did this deal for. I didn't give up a scoop to another, you know, trade to get an even break on Mark Ruffalo with the same trade. And these are things that the publicists and CorpCon people don't know. You know, like, I'm fucking wheeling and dealing out there. I negotiate deals same as the top agents in Hollywood. So, and they're not for millions of dollars, they're for stories, but still, I negotiate. And so they send me this story literally at 11:57 on Thursday night. And they say, Jeff, you're sharing the story with all these people. For, again, it goes back to what I've said on this podcast a million times. An embargo, okay, and look it up. Go to Wikipedia and look it up. An embargo is more or less an agreement, particularly if someone's been doing you a favor. Like, if no one has called on a piece of news and you set an embargo and you send it out, then I expect those reporters to abide by that embargo. But if someone has done you a favor and kept a secret of yours, and then, and not just for Searchlight, but for Ruffalo's team, who it's like, I can't even tell you how on top of this story I tried to be. It was like annoying. I annoyed myself checking in on it as often as I did. So you get this email at 11:57, no conversation, no phone call, no heads up that anyone else is even tracking the story. And they say, you're going at this time. Oh, and the best part was, Jeff, you know, you called on it first, so you can go 5 minutes early. We're cool with that. Well, thank you so much for being cool with that. You know who wasn't cool with it? This guy. I wasn't cool with it. So you know what I did? I fucking posted it right then and there. You know, I posted it at, I think it was 12:30 in the morning. Not an ideal time for news to be breaking, but I'd rather post at 12:30 in the morning and have a 9-hour exclusive than have a 5-minute exclusive window where, especially if you're a Collider, right? Because, I mean, you have to be like either on our site or on Twitter to see that we've posted a story, because we don't have breaking news alerts. What good does a 5-minute jump do me? Because the second I put it up there, right, people see it for 5 minutes and then the trades come over the top and everyone just pretends that they broke it. We don't even get any credit. And this hard work that I've done and this patience that I've showed is all for naught. So if you want to set an embargo with me and you want me to go with my higher profile colleagues, right, there's either got to be something down the line for me or I'm just not going to do it. Just have the conversation. Pick up the phone. It's that simple. All these communication people, none of them communicate. They just send emails with their instructions. Do this when I tell you to do this. That is not how fucking news works, and it is 100% not how I work. So sorry, Mark Ruffalo, to his team, to Fox Searchlight, but like, no, that's not how it's going to fly. Sorry. We move on to Moonfall. This is a $140 million movie starring Halle Berry, Michael Pena, and Patrick Wilson, coming out February 4th from Roland Emmerich. And I know it's all about Roland Emmerich and the visual effects and what you know, who cares about the cast? Fucking Independence Day was Bill Pullman, Judd Hirsch, Jeff Goldblum, and some Fresh Prince guy, you know? But I just don't know how you spend $140 million on this. Don't have a good feeling about this movie. The moon is like a ripe movie target. And I really like that idea that I think Aronofsky was exploring at one point about like the first murder on the moon. I really like that Ad Astra sequence that was set on the moon with like moon pirates. But yeah, don't have, just not having the best feeling about this based off of Roland Emmerich's recent work. Paramount Plus announced a June 10th date for Infinite, Antoine Fuqua's new movie with Mark Wahlberg. apparently this caught them off guard. They had no idea that this movie was even going to Paramount Plus, you know, when it was announced in May or something. Again, communication. I just don't understand it. I understand not wanting it to leak to the press prematurely, but at the same time, how do you not communicate this to Mark Wahlberg and Antoine Fuqua? Like, I mean, are these just like, are they lying when they say, oh, I had no idea? It beats me. All I know is this. This movie opens in 2 weeks, I want to say, right? On Paramount Plus. There's no trailer. Like, how embarrassed are they of this thing? I'm sure it'll be absolutely terrible, by the way. Absolutely terrible. You know what gives me that feeling? And I hate to say it. It's not so much Wahlberg or Chiwetel Ejiofor. It's the presence of Dylan O'Brien, who I like. But Dylan O'Brien, man, picking some rough movies lately. I watched one last night that was jaw-dropping in its complete ineptitude. From infinite to ineptitude. He's also has the and on this. I don't know if he's gonna get killed right up front or something like that. I don't know if he's in the movie all that much, but yeah, bad feeling for infinite. We're ready to see Mark Wahlberg in Joe Bell. I'll tell you that. That was another thing that was in the news this week. Solstice. I don't know if Solstice Studios is having money issues or if it's just you know, things have changed and so their model or approach has changed, but they gave up The Plane, this Gerard Butler movie that they had acquired. That's now back to Lionsgate. And then what the fuck was I just talking about? Joe Bell. They were planning on doing this big, you know, awards release for it and everything. But I don't know that it makes sense to go wide anymore. And they're not really in the limited release business. So now it's over at Roadside, which knows how to platform a movie and build that word of mouth, that kind of thing. Solstice put out Unhinged last summer, which I really liked. You know, even if it didn't do that great. Sterling K. Brown, Regina Hall, starring in Honk for Jesus, Save Your Soul. Do not love the title. But it sounded it was interesting. It's a satirical faux documentary exploring, you know, mega churches and that whole thing. And it comes from the Ebo sisters. These are twin sisters. One of them is writing and directing. The other one's producing. And I love, you know, family affairs like that. So I am rooting for this project. I do think Sterling and Regina are both very, very talented and make a great pairing on paper. The Friends reunion debuts today on HBO Max. I haven't seen it, so can't really spoil anything. Although, sounds like the big bombshell is that Jennifer Aniston was legitimately in love with one of her co-stars, especially during the first season of the show. I don't want to say who that is. I'll let you watch the special and find out, but expect to hear more about this as, you know, People Magazine and those kinds of places delve into the story and see if there's any fire where there's smoke. Adam Wingard signing on to direct Hardcore at Universal. Everybody sort of wants to be in business with Adam Wingard. I loved Adam Wingard back in the day with The Guest and You're Next. I have not loved his recent stuff. Godzilla vs. Kong was not for me. I'm not going to see Thundercats. You know, it would be nice to see Wingard sort of go back to his genre roots rather than these kind of big action movies based on comic books and other IP and shit. I don't know. I do want to watch Adam's partner, Simon Barrett's directorial debut, Seance. I do want to see that. Whew, man, we're running out of time. KJ Apa starring in West Pointer, a new movie from Rod Lurie, who actually graduated from West Point and wants to get permission to shoot there. I don't think a movie has shot at West Point Academy since the 50s. Robert Pattinson signing a first look deal with Warner Brothers New Line HBO Max. You know, obviously he is the Batman, so they want to stay in business with him. I'll be curious to see if Pattinson does any television. You know, if he does an HBO Max series or something like that, he would have been a good choice for Tokyo Vice, that HBO Max show from Michael Mann that Ansel Elgort is starring in. But listen, a lot of good, interesting stuff being done on TV. And I'll be very curious to see if Pattinson goes in that direction following a gigantic blockbuster like Batman. Last week, you broke a story about SpongeBob SquarePants and Sandy Cheeks. They heard the beloved squirrel from that show getting her own live-action spin-off movie from director Liza Johnson. I don't know if it's Liza Johnson or Lisa Johnson, but I'm going to say Liza Johnson. Don't watch SpongeBob. Not terribly familiar with the Sandy Cheeks character, but I think this makes sense. I think Paramount's looking at the success that it had with Sonic the Hedgehog. They took an animated character, put him in a live-action situation. I know SpongeBob has done stuff like that. And Sandy Cheeks seems like a fun character kids will enjoy. Nickelodeon is producing this, but it is for a streaming service. You would assume it's for Paramount Plus, right? Especially with their mandate to put out a new movie every single week. But at the same time, Paramount Plus didn't exactly cop to it. So I wonder if this is in fact being made for Netflix, which dropped the last Netflix movie in international territories or whatever. Lionsgate picked up John Carney's musical, Fascinating Rhythm, which is, uses the music of Gershwin and Martin Scorsese's producing. This is one of those projects where it's like, I don't get it. I don't know what kids are excited to see a Gershwin musical. I don't know. I mean, John Carney gives me pause because I love him. He's brilliant. He is the guy to go and get to make a musical out of anything. But Gershwin, really? Seems a little stale. Lauren Shuker Blumhouse, Jason Blum's wife, and Rebecca Angelo tapped to write a GameStop movie, The Anti-Social Network. I don't need all these GameStop projects. I don't care about To the Moon or HODL or any of this fucking Wall Street stuff. It's all I hear about all day long, whether I'm on, poker Zooms with my high school buddies or my brothers are talking. Everybody's talking about crypto and stocks and this fucking stuff. And I do not have enough. I don't have the money to risk. That's the thing. My friends all make a lot of money, so they can say, all right, I'm going to buy 5,000 shares of this or put $10,000 into that. I don't have that kind of money, so I don't pay attention to it. I ignore it. But congrats to Lauren and Rebecca on getting that gig. Noma Dumizwani joining Retribution with Liam Neeson. I mean, this is a minor casting, but I did think that she was very, very good on The Undoing. And Retribution could be an interesting Liam Neeson movie. I mean, some are more interesting than others. They are all kind of the same. I'm gonna drink some water. I think this is one worth like. Liam Neeson is in a driving his two kids to school, and then someone comes over, the voice of the car radio, and gives him all these instructions and shit to do. I think Noma is playing the law enforcement person, sort of on the case, on the trail. One of my favorite authors, Don Winslow, sent me a lovely package this week. I didn't even know it was coming or anything. I'd read this story on Deadline that said that he was shopping his new book trilogy, which is like City on Fire, City of Thieves, and then a third untitled book. And I was like, oh, I love reading this line on Deadline because like I loved. The story was about City of Lies, but there was a line in it saying that his last book, Broken, which came out last summer, that which was a series of novellas. That those novellas are in the process of landing at different places. So I loved hearing that line because I thought Broken was terrific. I would have acquired that whole book yesterday if I was an executive. I think you can make some really interesting movies and shows based on that book. Just as you could, The Force, which James Mangold is supposed to do with Matt Damon once he wraps Indiana Jones. Excited to dive into City on Fire because I just finished the book I was reading, which was Anne Rule's book on the Green River Killer. It was 525 pages, which is long for the kind of books that I read. So I've just been immersed in Green River Killer territory for the last 2 weeks or whatever. I'm looking forward to getting a break and just, catching up with Don's latest. What a nice package to show up, like literally 45 minutes after I tweeted about him. Don also sent another copy of Falling, that TJ Newman book behind me, which you should absolutely read. It's going to be like the beach read of summer. It is about a pilot. I'm sure I already told you, and Universal, you know, bought the rights for $1 million, but it's about a pilot who basically, you know, is given the option. You either have to crash the plane that you're flying and kill everybody on board, or we're going to kill your family who's on the ground. Tough decision to make. I'm not going to tell you what decision he makes. Scooter Braun teamed with Anthony McCartney to do a Phantom of the Opera, from Phantom of the Opera musical thriller. Ji Young Yoo cast in Expats. That is another Amazon series starring Nicole Kidman. Nicole Kidman, I mean, she just has so many TV projects, I can't even keep track of them all. This one's about like a community of expats living in Hong Kong. So it's more of like an ensemble sort of piece. Chris Noth, or Noth, or Mr. Big is back in And Just Like That, the new Sex and the City series coming to HBO Max. Of course he was coming back. How do you make that show without Mr. Big? Yet you need to have him back. Well, as far as the trailers this week go, there were a lot of them. We got a trailer this morning for Old, M. Night Shyamalan's new movie. They also sent over a lovely little package, so thank you to Universal. They sent this beautiful picnic basket with an old beach towel inside and an hourglass, a very, very cool hourglass. But what does that all have to do with Old time? Sandcastle, right behind me. Boom. I went out and got it as soon as I heard what Old was about, because it is inspired by this graphic novel here. I think it looks really good. I am worried that that M. Night could screw it up somehow. The graphic novel doesn't really have an ending, so I guess you can't botch the ending because there really wasn't one in the book. But basically, it's about all these strangers who come to this beach, and the beach starts aging them in really weird, wild, freaky ways. I mean, the trailer is like a real trip. I just like the idea of dark thrillers like that in really sunny settings. There's a book, I Kill, by Giorgio Feletti, that I wanted to turn into a show, and that's set on Monte Carlo. I always like the idea of like the serial killer series set in a really sort of warm, locale like that. It's just a good contrast. So he's lined up a great cast for this movie. I'm excited for Old. That is definitely one of my more anticipated movies of the summer. We got a first look at Eternals, the Marvel movie from Chloe Zhao. Looked fine. It did look different from other Marvel movies. It looked a little bit more artful. I could certainly see the natural light and stuff. And the cast is really good. Like I am looking forward to this Marvel movie much more so than something like Black Widow. But at the same time, it didn't look like it just broke the mold or anything. It looks like a lot of other Marvel movies featuring, you know, big ensembles of eternal ass kickers who can't be hurt. What do you want me to say? I'm more excited for False Positive, the Hulu movie with Alana Glazer, Justin Theroux, and Pierce Brosnan. It seems like she's got some kind of evil pregnancy thing going on. I don't know if it's a Rosemary's Baby type of situation, or if this is like Pierce Brosnan is up to no good, which is what I suspect. But yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing Alana Glazer's first kind of big dramatic turn. I like that trailer, just set to an old-timey version of Be My Baby, and it gets very, very bloody at the end. We got his first trailer for Last Night in Soho, Edgar Wright's psychological thriller. He's going to take us back in time, starring Thomasin McKenzie and Anya Taylor-Joy. I've always called her Anya Taylor-Joy, but on SNL this week, I learned it's Anya. By the way, SNL was great this past week. I thought it was – I loved the opening sketch, the monologue, Weekend Update with the joke swap, the Beck Bennett prom night thing, the bra sketch. It was a very, very strong SNL. So nice job by Anya Taylor-Joy. Last Night in Soho, I thought it looked good. I'm not like a huge Edgar Wright person. I mean, I like him, but I don't love him. And then this movie looks like something that I will like but not love. Visually, it looks stunning, but I'm still not sure what the story is here. Like, is it a ghost story? Is it a time travel thing? Like, what is happening here? I don't need to know everything going into these movies, but I generally have a better sense of what the story is. And this is one of those projects that I'm just, you know, the entire time been like, what is this? I mean, this could end up being a tricky sell. But the trailer was very, very, you know, well cut. I love the freeze frame there at the end. Here's what I don't want. I don't want another Bad Times at the El Royale, which is what I'm getting just from like the neon and stuff. Yeah, I don't know. Right, we did that. We did the Tomorrow War with Chris Pratt. That doesn't look good. Nope. That looks like another Without Remorse, like Skydance. We thought this was going to be something because we had a big star in it and, you know, we pumped money into it, but no, that does not look good at all. Dave season 2, really, really fun trailer for Dave season 2. No like footage from the season. It was just this big, you know, ridiculous action sequence where Dave is flying through the air with an anteater. But I can't wait for that show to come back, and I will be reviewing it for Collider, you know, provided I get the screeners. And then finally, our last trailer of the week was Escape Room Tournament of Champions. Escape Room was like a sleeper hit for Sony a couple years ago. It was with Taylor Russell. It was like this is like a PG-13 Saw. That's what this franchise is. It's a PG-13 Saw. And this one looked fun. It looked like they put some more money into it. Just some really wild kind of stuff. They turned a subway car into an escape room. I thought this trailer was a lot of fun. And like, this should not be the trailer that I'm raving about this week, you know, with Last Night in Soho and everything. But it is. I am looking forward to Escape Room 2. On the reviews front, I haven't seen A Quiet Place Part 2. I may go tonight to see it. This may be my return to theaters tonight, depending on what time I wrap up work. I've heard nothing but great things. The other movie coming out this week is Cruella. And Cruella, I like Cruella on the whole. You know, there's been a lot of talk this week about who is this movie for, right? From white male critics, right? And then, which means all the female critics had to be like, you know what, critics, like, just review the movie. Don't worry about who it's for. Let Disney worry about who it's for. The truth is, that was a question that I had myself. The playlist review that I read said the same thing. I mean, I know the movie's not for me. It is for a very narrow audience, which I think is like 12 to 14-year-old girls. It's not a movie for kids. It's too dark for kids. And teenage boys might like this too, you know, depending on how much they like Emma Stone. I like the energy and the style that this had. I realized that a lot of people thought it was terrible, and then the needle drops were like the antithesis of punk, you know? But to me, it made the whole thing more watchable. I really like what Paul Walter Hauser and Joel Fry were doing in this. I thought Emma Stone was good. I thought Emma Thompson was great. So like the cast elevates this thing. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, it's still a fucking live action Disney movie. Like there's a ceiling on those kinds of adaptations. This one is just dark. Like, the real problem that I had with this movie though, it's not like the tone or, you know, who's it for or whatever. It's the length. 135 minutes. 2 hours and 15 minutes for Cruella. Like, I just don't see how, if you're a studio executive, like that is a no-brainer. 15 minutes needs to be cut, probably 20, right? 20 minutes easy. I saw some critics saying 40 to 45 minutes you could take out. Just make this an hour and a half long movie. You probably could have. I will defend up to the 2 hour point, but after that, it literally becomes indefensible. So 135 minutes, Disney, you are shitting me. You're shitting me. I don't know if it's like the extended running times, if it makes people feel like they've gotten more bang for their buck, you know, like, oh, if I'm going to the theater, if I'm going to sit at home with the kids, like I want them entertained for 2 to 3 hours. I got to have fucking Godzilla's got to be 2.5 hours or fucking Army of the Dead, 2.5 hours. Like, do you think that we feel better getting more movie? I'm telling you, less is more. Make these fucking movies short. I don't know what else I got to say. Anyways, Cruella, 2.5 stars. I mean, it's not good, but I can't say it was bad. Maybe it should have been a 2-star movie, 2.5 stars. It's not 3 and it's not 1. people beating up on this thing. I just don't understand. You got to see some more bad movies. There were folks on the company Slack today bitching about Carell. I'm like, guys, watch that fucking Dylan O'Brien movie I saw. Oh my goodness. Then you will know. All right. Couple mailbag questions before we wrap up. Keltrick Pickens asks, with MGM now off the board and streaming wars clearly heating up, with your insight, what studio do you think will be purchased next and by who? I don't think the consolidation is over. I mean, I think it's got to be Lionsgate, particularly with them losing like Knives Out, which, you know, could have made them a lot more money over the next few years. But like, you know, and even Spiral, like if Spiral had been really good and we're like, oh yes, the Saw franchise is back, baby. No. So they've lost Knives Out. Put Saw in a fucking drawer and, you know, and just leave it there for a while. They've got John Wick. And how much more can you really do with John Wick? How many more creative ways can you have Keanu Reeves fucking kill people? I mean, it feels like just a few years ago we were talking about Lionsgate and these big sort of entertainment like centers, and there's going to be rides and experiences, and now it's like, you know what, Lionsgate, you may just want to give it up and sell to Apple or whoever. But I do think Lionsgate will be next. Keltrick also asks, I'm fully vaccinated, been back to my local theater twice for Tuesday night classics. I saw Gladiator and Batman 89 on the big screen and had a blast. What are some things you think theaters must do now more than ever to make sure people actually want to leave their homes and go to the theater? Well, for starters, I think you got to put movie listings back in the newspaper. You know, we haven't had movie listings in a year in like the Boston Globe. I think it would be nice to see, hey, these theaters are open and here's what they're showing, rather than having to go online and look at that on Fandango or whatever. You know, what do they need to do? I think that they need to offer fucking like deals. Like here's like a 2-for-1 ticket deal, or come tonight and get a free plush doll or a free poster, or, you know, a free popcorn and soda. It's just like something that gives it that little extra oomph, because like, you know, I want to go back tonight and I ask friends and family members, do you guys want to come tonight? They don't. They are fine waiting that extra 45 days to catch A Quiet Place 2 in their living room on Paramount Plus, you know? So, I certainly think that now that people have gotten used to seeing movies in their home, it is going to be tough to get them back into theaters. And theaters and studios really have to go above and beyond in terms of just providing a little something extra. And honestly, I think ticket prices have a big thing to do with it. Like, I could order a month of Paramount Plus. I don't know what it costs. Let's just say it costs $10. I get A Quiet Place Part 2. I get to watch The Stand, which I never saw. I get, you know, all this stuff for $10, or I could spend $18.50 on a premium ticket to see A Quiet Place 2 in you know, I want to go to the Dedham movie theater. They have, you know, the regular screen, 2D screen, which is $14.50, and then they have an X Plus screen. I don't know what the fucking X Plus screen is for $18.50, but it's like, if I have to pay $4 extra for like good sound and picture, like, no, you're doing it wrong. Okay, just give me the best sound and picture for the fucking normal ticket price. Like, since when do we have to start playing up charges on that kind of shit? Drives me nuts. Last question of the day is Rob G. Hey, Jeff, I was wondering, what's a director whose first film you consider to be excellent and a masterpiece, but has never been able to achieve such heights again, in your opinion? I mean, the obvious answer to me, because I think this is a masterpiece, I think that this guy is a genius who just has got caught up in his own genius a little too much, is Donnie Darko and Richard Kelly. Donnie Darko is, to me, absolutely brilliant. I just want Richard to get back out on the horse. I want someone to give him another shot. Southland Tales was a self-indulgent, obnoxious disaster, and The Box was like kind of generic and dull. Like, I haven't gone back to The Box. I don't know anyone who's sort of really revisited that title. So Richard just, he hit a home run and then he had the sophomore slump. And then by the third movie, it was just like, okay, you're done. That doesn't make sense to me. Like, if you can make a movie like Donnie Darko once, you can probably do it again with the right resources and stuff like that. I mean, Jake Gyllenhaal, throw this fucking guy a bone. Like, he made you for the most part. Like, Go do a Richard Kelly movie, Jake. Be a pal. Bring him a script that Nine Stories is developing, you know? But, like, Richard Kelly, there is talent there, and I think that he deserves another chance. So that's my answer. That'll do it for the Snyder Cut this week. I think it was a good episode. Enjoy the sun. Get outside. Take a walk. You don't need your masks anymore. CDC said it's safe. Be mindful of who you're around. If someone wants you to wear a mask, put it on. But other than that, go enjoy your Memorial Day weekend. Have barbecues with your family and friends. Go for a dip in the pool or the lake or the ocean or wherever. Hopefully we get some good weather. And I'll see you next week. It'll be June next week. Crazy. This year is flying by. Enjoy a quiet place for the weekend. And I'll see you later.